There really isn't much of a difference between organized religion and theater. We all have a deep need to come together and watch a transcendent performance to make sense of the world around us. The problem is, what happens when your group becomes toxic and grows into a cult?
The craziest thing on TV right now is Netflix's new documentary, Wild Wild Country. The six-part series takes a look at the conflict between the town folk of Antelope, Oregon, and the Orange People, a cult formed by Indian mystic Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. The documentary has everything: guns, bombs, drugs, imperialism, racism, attempted murder, bioterrorism, Learjets, Rolls Royces by the dozens, and freaky naked hippies.
My favorite! Today we take a look at the strange but true story of the Rajneesh cult that exploded in the 80s in Oregon, and what folks who organize theater groups and religious organizations can learn from their mistakes.
Plus, Smallville actress Allison Mack gets arrested for her alleged role in sex trafficking for a cult that abused women.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Are we watching Hare
Hare Rama
again?
For the 100th time.
It
one
is
of my
a good
favorite
musical.
Musicals, yeah. You know that the musical Hair, when it premiered in Broadway, on Broadway, shocked audiences.
Oh, for sure.
Because the performers started out the show naked.
Mm-hmm. And they still often do it nude. You don't have to do it nude, but it adds to the ambiance.
It's the all-nude musical audiences are raving about. That penis was pretty big, and those pussies are bushy. Bushy, bushy.
We had a performance artist friend who used to perform, but he wouldn't do it in the nude. He'd wear like a little Speedo or something, because he says he finds like the penis is too distracting for audience members. And I'm like, well, if they could see it.
Well, every generation has their reckoning with nudity.
Yeah.
And part of that is because as human beings, we have this common desire to understand our bodies and understand the world around us. And so we gravitate either to religion or to theater or both, or even cults that kind of scramble everything up as a way to understand our lives. And my generation turned to performance art, and certainly like the radical fairies were a big influence on the way we do our lives and what we do. And a lot of these hippie cults that blossomed in the 60s, 70s, and 80s are still with us today. Mm-hmm. Even the people from the new Netflix documentary, Wild, Wild Country.
The Orange People,
they're still at it. You can visit their website. Mm-hmm. They're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Oh yeah, they are
Snapchat.
Still around.
They're fucking Snapchat. You can visit them at osho.com. And their photos of all them hippies dancing and fucking and having a good time.
Well, so they got it in early on the internet boom then, because they have a four-letter URL.
And they also have deep pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And so
those Learjets don't come cheaply,
or the Rolls Royces.
Mm-hmm.
And so our good friend Peaches Christ, who's a drag queen, she calls herself a cult leader.
She sure does. But she's like the good kind of cult, because it's about fandom and celebrating cult movies.
Yeah. But I also say that, I would say that whenever you're a person who organizes people around an idea, there's a huge potential for it to become toxic. And this is something.
She's going to interpret this as a read now.
Well, the shoe fits. No, I'm just kidding. And that's something that I've always faced in organizing people, because I love to collaborate. Mm-hmm. I love to organize people just like Peaches does. Mm. And I imagine that Peaches faces those challenges all the time. Is how do you keep the group dynamics healthy? How do you make it so people can come and leave at their own free will, that they are participate in your group because they want to, not because they're somehow their lives will be destroyed if they leave you.
Not because you have their passport locked up in a safe somewhere and you have control of their bank account and everything.
Maybe that's Peaches Christ's secret.
I think it's entertainment.
She has a good safe with the key stuck in her boobs. If you get a fishing pole when Peaches is sleeping, you can get the key from underneath her neck.
Hey, listen, we'll talk about how to escape a cult later on in the podcast.
So Peaches came to town, and we taped a Cooking with Drag Queens with her, and Mink stole. And Peaches was like, have you guys watched Wild Wild Country on Netflix?
Well, to be clear, we did a Cooking with Drag Queens with Peaches Christ. Yes. And then Mink Stole came into town so they could do idol worship.
Correct.
Their show where Peaches and Mink get up on stage and they sing and they talk and they chat about Mink's illustrious career working with John Waters and other people.
And we, like you guys, we cherish and love our conversations with Peaches. And we talked about all kinds of things. And one of the things that Peaches brought up was this documentary called Wild Wild Country on Netflix. And Mark and I were completely oblivious.
No, I had heard about it. I had heard about it, but I hadn't had a chance to watch it yet.
And Peaches was a little disappointed.
Yeah, she kind of looked at us like, you guys are disappointing me by not saying it.
Well, honey, Peaches, if you're listening, I spent my whole weekend when I was not at work watching Netflix, that six-part documentary.
6 hours. It's good for binge watch. 6 hours is a good binge watch.
It's one of the wildest, crazy things on television.
When I say it has everything, it has everything. Just when you think that you've gotten to all of it, you're like, oh my God, there's another layer. And then there's another layer. And then there's another layer. Mm-hmm. And it just makes you think about it. And I still don't even know how I feel about a lot of it because it has so many different things. You know, this cult moves into basically this small town and takes over this small town. So all the town folks are like, who the fuck are these people that you just got here? And now you're taking everything over? So it's like, you know, it's like colonization. It's imperialism, like right now.
I don't know if I can imagine the first time that a group of white people have been colonized in the United States. So maybe, you know, it's karmic retribution. Mm-hmm. But definitely these people, led by Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, who was a godman, an Indian term for a charismatic guru. He and his followers were chased out of India, and they were like, where do we go where there's money and there's, you know, gullible people and free love and everything?
And they're like, freedom.
And freedom, and Oregon seemed like a good place just as any. So they set up shop in this sleepy, abandoned little town, and all these old people who were retired there were shocked. Mm-hmm. And so, you know,
there was a real culture clash there for sure.
The documentary really doesn't explain what his teachings were like. Mm-hmm. And so I went and started I went to Osho.com.
Because he later became known. He was Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh.
Yes.
And then later on, he became known as Osho.
Yeah, but he took on that name later on in his life. But he was a charismatic guru. He was a philosopher, a comedian, and who interwove stand-up comedy. He literally did stand-up comedy and philosophical teachings in this really chaotic performance that... and he also studied hypnotism. Mm. And so I wish I could have been there and seen... You know, there's some videos of him on YouTube, but it just doesn't really capture the idea of being in a trance by this weirdo from a foreign country, from a culture you don't really understand, and where he was espousing the idea that anything can be a form of prayer. Fucking, laughing, screaming, being quiet, meditating, anything could be prayer. And so if you look at, and I started reading a lot of his writings.
Are you going to become an orange person now?
No, I'm very interested in because this cult influenced so many people and influenced counterculture. And so much of what we think about a cult today came from these individuals. And I would think of him as the closest thing we've ever had to Marvel Comics Loki from Thor.
You're saying he's an agent of chaos.
He's an agent of chaos. And chaos can be pleasurable. Chaos can be sexy. And he was definitely a free love, free sex commune leader who frowned upon homosexuality, thought of homosexuality as immature. But if it was pussy and penis, come on down.
So immature, but not necessarily wrong.
And this is a lot of the homeless people that they were trying to basically take over their city government. So they bust all these homeless people from around the country. And these homeless people, you know, who some of them suffered from mental illness, mental health challenges, and they were not equipped for it. They didn't have the facilities, the training, the medication for it. And so they were just trying to get all these people, sheer mass numbers, to vote to take over the city council of the region. And so the city government responded to that by just saying, if you hadn't voted in the last election, this next election, you cannot vote.
Yeah, and I don't know how I feel about it, because it's like you're denying these people the right to vote, but also, too, it's kind of like... They were, in very much ways, just kind of like interlopers. But isn't, but part of me is like, isn't that what this nation is kind of founded on? You're supposed to be able to come someplace and just, you know, do what you want to do.
So these, you know, the huddled poor masses, the heartbroken, the black sheep of people's families were there, and they started causing trouble. And so they started drugging their beer with painkillers, with morphine, basically, to calm these cracked out homeless people down, and you know, when they were done with them, when they felt like they had no use for them, they kicked them back out. And so the press interviewed them, and they were saying, "There's a bunch of queers in there. There are a bunch of faggots in there, and there's all this homosexuality happening." And
that's what the homeless people were saying.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So there was a lot of hypocrisy there, right?
Sure.
So there was, you know, the counterculture of the late 70s, early 80s attracted a lot of people who are trying to make sense about their gender and sexual identity. And meanwhile, there was, I think, a lot. The one thing that the documentary doesn't really show is that this cult also exploited women and young women. And certainly one of their most controversial leaders was Anand Sheela, who was a tool for this guru, who was introduced to him by her father when she was only 16 years old. And she became drunk, intoxicated by the power of becoming a cult leader herself.
Yeah. Well, she drank the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh Kool-Aid, that's for sure. She said she was like instantly attracted to him, and just like, and like, just was, he was so charismatic, and she was just like, anything for this man. And so she, it was like his right hand person, and helped him come to the United States, helped him found and ran this cult for a number of years. But then the Bhagwan started hanging out with some other people, and so they started to kind of control him, and he fell out of her control. And so, you know, eventually she had to leave them, but she kind of, she took some of those philosophies with her.
I would say Wild Wild Country is must-see TV. It's really riveting series. I feel like it just scratches the surface in some ways, and never really examines the idea of why so many white, successful, rich people uprooted themselves in the height of the 1980s, you know, with the selfishness, the me generation, the you know, instead of doing cocaine in discos, they were doing morphine-laced beer at the discos of this cult.
Well, a lot of people, they wanted that connection. They wanted to feel like life had meaning, and they, a lot of them were involved in jobs that they didn't really feel very much passion for, and so they were like, let me find something else, and they had the means to just kind of uproot themselves and go. But, you know, not everybody that went into this cult was super rich, but also, too, I mean, they got donations from all around the world because they were really good at, like, marketing themselves. So they put themselves, like, on tote bags, aprons, t-shirts, and more. Which we have some you can get at our store, feastoffun.com. But we are not a cult.
I think that we can learn from anybody who organizes groups of people can learn a lot from watching this organization, this documentary, because we all share some things in common. It's that there's a lot of diverse, when you have a diverse group of people coming together, you have different needs. And I think, you know, in terms of being a cult leader or oppressing other people, one thing you do can do wrong, and it's very tempted, is to give the group the impression that you, only you, holds the keys, the answers to the questions they're trying to answer, and that your group is the only link to this paradise. Whether that be theater, you know, or it can be, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race is an example of a cult. In the sense that if you don't participate in RuPaul's Drag Race, you'll never be successful as a drag queen.
And that's not true.
And definitely it's not true. And but, you know, it's tempting.
It's an easy path
for the people who organize RuPaul's Drag Race, the people who organize those shows, to feel like they're inflated self-importance and try to punish people who challenge that group structure. And we started to seeing that, you know, people being pushed out of organizations and groups and you know, businesses associated. I think the way that, for example, the controversy right now with season two winner
Tyra Sanchez,
I don't think that's being handled well.
So the controversy is that, you know, she illicit said she would beat somebody's ass, basically, for
who was fighting with her on social media.
Her, and she's like, I would like to knock your ass to the ground. So it was this type of violence. And so she, you know, they asked for an apology. She responded to it. They're like, it's not really clear if that's an apology. And she's just like, well, it's, you know, if you don't understand who I am as a person, I don't know what to tell you. And so I guess technically she's banned from being at RuPaul's Drag Con.
And, you know, I see a lot of similarities with the Rajneesh with RuPaul, actually. They both love sparkly things, and they're kind of like drag, especially Rajneesh.
Oh, he's totally a drag queen in his outfits.
And yeah. Rajneesh did something. He surrounded himself by difficult individuals and quarrelsome women who did his fighting for him.
Scalding.
Well, I'm just saying that this is what we see in the documentary. And I'm not saying that this is exactly what RuPaul does, but I'm saying there's a lot of similarities there. And RuPaul isn't as awful as this person. And the fact that you're nervous for me making those comparisons confirms the fact that there is a little bit of a cult with RuPaul's Drag Race. And the fact that you're literally looking at me right now going, how can you make this comparison? We're going to be pet punished. That confirms the fact that this is a dysfunctional cult. And that's okay, because the next step is acknowledge the dysfunctionalness of the organization and the group. And I think if you want to keep your group from becoming a cult, you have to acknowledge the dysfunctional nature of that group and open yourself up to criticism and be able to analyze that criticism.
And that's the key. And this is what they're always pushing for in like corporate America, you know, nowadays is like, it's about diversity. And when you have a cult, it is like one voice. It's one way to do things. It's not about opening up. It's not about discovering, hey, this person has this. This person has this to share. And you can come together. Everybody has their own ideas. And maybe you can make something work.
If you want your cult to be successful, you can't do it alone. Mm. It requires you to sort of have two types of individuals. You have to have the Sheila and you have to have the Rajneesh. You have to have the strong, difficult leader who takes all the heat, and you have to have the mystic weirdo who stands in the background and everybody worships. So people hated Sheila, but Sheila was the one organizing everything and adored the guru Rajneesh, the Osho, you know. And so you have, and if you ask yourself, is this group a cult? Look for those types of individuals, because those always manifest themselves.
So you're in our relationship, I'd say you're the Sheila, right?
Maybe, you know, and I think that's just a natural group dynamics. Yeah. It takes two to create that type of dynamic
group.
They
say behind every strong man is a strong woman.
And the idea there is that somebody is the mystical figure, and then the other person is the one who is like moving and pushing people forward and takes the heat from that. So in order to make things healthy for yourself, and I think I would argue that RuPaul is doing these things, and Peaches does this too, and most groups do this, is they open themselves up to criticism and implements that criticism into their system, into their organization. Because otherwise, when you start making that yourself impenetrable that way, then that's where the toxic environment starts to escalate. And the people who are in leadership positions will do anything and everything to hold on to it.
Like they'll blend up little beaver parts and throw it into your water supply.
Or poison your salad bar and with salmonella. You know, this is the thing. It was like, this was one of the crimes, was they found strains of salmonella that had been cultivated in their little biofarms on their ranch, where the DNA matched the strains of the salmonella they found in the salad bars that poisoned people.
Right. Because, they were fighting with the townsfolk, right? Yeah. So they were trying to gain control of the town and to let them know, like, we will not be fucked with. And so they did bioterrorism. And you're saying it was I don't remember them saying this in the documentary, but you said that it was the first recorded of bioterrorism here in the United States.
It's the mass bioterrorism in the United States, yeah. It's where, you know, usually people poison their neighbor or an individual. This is the group, you know, organizing themselves to poison large groups of people.
Yeah, because it was like, how many people got like sick? Like 700 or something?
Something
it was,
like that,
it was
yeah.
crazy amount of people got sick.
You know, and your group needs more converts, right? Mm-hmm. So if you are the charismatic leader and or the difficult, quarrelsome leader, one thing that fuels your group is the members. Mm. You're only as strong as the number of members that you have. Mm. A dysfunctional group always is trying to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It's never satisfied with just 100 members or 1,000 members. It wants to have 1 million and wants to take over mm-hmm. the world. And so when you're in this situation, ask yourself, like, is it enough to have 100 people, 1,000 people in your organization? You know, do you really want to get much, much bigger? I would say, like, the radical fairies mm-hmm. Have a healthy relationship with that because they're not seeking out people. They don't run ads in newspapers or like, come join us, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the
like
orange
Scientologists
people, Scientologists is another dysfunctional cult, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, some people argue the Catholic Church is a dysfunctional cult, as you know, the Mormon Church runs ads in the Book of Mormon, which is a musical that criticizes it. But they're like, hey, while you're here, come take a look at our religion, mm-hmm. you know. And I would say that's a bit
some
of a
people
racket,
have yeah. seen Book of Mormon and become Mormons after seeing it.
And this stuff that I'm talking about is very controversial. Mm-hmm. And some of you guys listening to this might not appreciate having your group,
your beliefs,
or your beliefs, your favorite TV show, your favorite theater company, to ask yourself mm-hmm. the difficult questions mm-hmm. that must be asked, which is, are we mm-hmm. being dysfunctional? How can we create a healthier, better mm-hmm. relationship with everybody?
You know, it's funny because you mentioned theater companies, and it's like, it seems here in Chicago, theater is such a big thing. Mm-hmm. And the actors a lot of them refer to a lot of these different theater companies as cults. And a lot of times, like we've had some instances in the past couple of years where like these leaders of these theater companies have been known to like abuse some of the members, but they get away with it for so long because they do function like a real cult.
And one of the things that cults have is that their leaders mm-hmm. are infallible. Like mm-hmm. Trump's followers are very much like a cult. Mm-hmm. Or when you hear again, if somebody talks about their favorite drag queen or musician as infallible, mm-hmm. then the chances are they might have a cult-like mentality.
But so it's different. So how do you separate like fandom versus like a cult?
I don't think there are degrees of the same mm-hmm. mindset.
Okay.
And, you know, too much of a good thing is no good. And I think, you know, to some degree, we as human beings need to organize and, you know, have something to fandom about, something to stand about, something to eventually grow into a cult.
Did you just say Stan?
Stan, yeah.
Oh, my baby's learning internet speak.
It's such a stupid word. Because it literally means exactly the same thing as fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, we have to misspelled. Yeah.
Many years ago on the internet.
So, you know, fanning or standing or culting about something, it is about like desiring and loving the idea behind it. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, as human beings, we need to have that. It when we get dysfunctional, like mm-hmm. if someone says, you know, I don't really like your band, your favorite performer, your favorite book, your favorite film. If you take that personally, you take that as a personal attack, then that's a dysfunctional thing. And you'd be like, you know, we can still be friends if any of you don't like the same TV show that I do. But if you're not watching RuPaul's Drag Race, you're a fool, you motherfucker, you know. And some people, you know, we've observed that who are diehard fans of RuPaul's Drag Race, if you say, like, I'm not really feeling it this season, and then that, oh boy, the fights are going to start coming, you know.
Why do you feel that way?
Well, how do I, about this season, or, you know, and my feeling about art is that, like, there's always a lid to every pot, mm-hmm. just, you know, and in some ways the group dynamics is also about individual dynamics. And you know, you think about like toxic relationships mm-hmm. that couples can have, that same toxicity can manifest itself in a group. And so if you think about like, you know, a couple that abuses each other, and it's always like they fight, they beat each other, and then they like, it's never going to happen again. And then that cycle perpetuates itself until somebody is really permanently injured. And the dysfunctional group dynamics also escalate in that manner. So there's always like horrible things are done to individuals in the group, and then the group heals and moves forward, and then that just happens over and over again, never asking themselves, why did we feel like we needed to attack or ostracize or humiliate somebody in our group? And so a dysfunctional group is going to be doing those things again and again, just the same way that somebody is beating their spouse. Mm. And it says, baby, I'm sorry, you know, let's forgive, you know, we'll do when this will never happen again. Because, you know, the groups, when they get rid of that person, mm-hmm. when they abuse that person, then they're like, finally, we are free of that toxic individual.
Pick somebody else, because it's like, you know, chickens in a hen house. There's always a pecking order. Somebody's always going to be on that bottom rung, and they're always going to be pecked on.
And you know that notice when they got rid of Ma'an on Sheila, mm-hmm. when Sheila left, there was a new person, difficult leader, to take her place to do more of the controversial
behavior.
Because
one bitch won't do, another one will.
And another thing about, and Mark and I said this, cults or groups tend to give everybody unnecessary work. And a person who is a stalker, a person who wants to have a dysfunctional relationship with you as an entertainer, mm-hmm. has one thing in common.
They're lazy.
They don't want to do no work.
They don't want to do the... And Sheila was even... Anand Sheila was actually talking about this. It's like, we got rid of all the lazy people. And like, if they weren't ready to be active and to do mental work, we would get rid of them. Because a lot of people would be like, oh, I'll just come and party and play and like not do anything.
What's the quality of a lazy, of a stalker? Like, they're putting in their frustration in mm-hmm. life on you and making you responsible for mm-hmm. it. And so the stalker creates a dysfunctional relationship between the person that they're stalking, the entertainer that they're claiming to admire, but ultimately it's a situation where they're wanting the entertainer to do all the work for them. Mm-hmm. And so one thing I always said to people who are like, oh, my fans are stalking me and stuff, I said, go print out some flyers, hand them to your stalkers and say, would you mind passing these out?
Yeah.
And the stalker will throw the flyers in the dumpster and you'll never hear from them again.
That's exactly right. It's true. You got to put them to work.
Now, obviously, you know, good fences make good neighbors and good relationships, mm-hmm. and also knowing your limits, and when somebody in your group is abusive towards you, saying no and, you know, saying this is you can't mm-hmm. go this far.
But, you know, the thing is like when you're in a cult, a lot of times you don't even realize you're in the cult. You feel as though you're just part of something and it becomes normalized to you, right?
Ask yourself the question, if I leave this group tomorrow, will my life be destroyed? And that's why I'm concerned about, this is well, why I bring that, this up
what,
about.
What kind of answers would you expect from that? What does that mean with my life?
That's
be
a cult.
But not all. It's not always. Sometimes you can leave a cult and they leave you alone. Sometimes they never come after
no,
you.
No, if you're saying you can't leave the group because you have nothing else, I would say that's a dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of times people believe they're like, I'm in a cult and I'm doing this thing and we're doing good work. And that's one of the things they say when you want to escape a cult is really like you might stick around because you feel like you're doing good work. But remember, there are millions and millions of ways to do good work. You can feed the poor. You can clothe the homeless. You know, that all sorts of stuff.
And I would argue like there's a lot of good things in every cult. Every redeeming cult has a good quality.
What did you like about this cult?
I love their embracingness of chaos. Mm. I love the fact that they, you know, have these crazy screaming orgies where they were like they're hairy.
They were doing that primal scream kind of thing that was
therapy.
Really big in the 70s. Well, you know what's funny?
I've done that kind of therapy.
It's the Bhagwan, his thing was just like, and that's the essence of this show, is like to have fun. He wanted people to have joy and to dance
cut
and
loose.
To laugh and to cut loose and to enjoy themselves. And he was just like, that's what, you know, we're missing out on so much joy. And when I watch the videos, and that's the thing, is like when you watch the video of the town folk and then you watch the video of the cult members, you're kind of like, who are the people you'd want to hang out with? Would you rather hang out with the town folk, or would you rather hang out with the hippie freaky people?
And I think you know, one of the problems that the freaky hippie dippy people had is that they were very much colonialists. They came into this community. They really didn't spend a lot of time, at least from the documentary. Now there's interviews happening with the members, and they said, we actually one of them actually was friends with a guy from Nike, the rancher, the wealthy rancher, and actually spent a lot of time with him, you know, and interacting with him. So it wasn't as us versus them as the media made it out to be. But definitely they could have done more to reach out and be part of that community and invite that community to participate with them.
Yeah, come to our discotheque to hang out.
And part of it was like they really didn't, they could have, you know, put their own money in helping build schools there or build infrastructure or help, instead of creating their own little city. They could have helped to build up the city that already was there. And so I think that was you know, and then certainly like Mon on Sheila, she was not a kind person. She was not a compassionate person. She was not empathic. And a lot of people who criticized this cult said that, you know, they had zero empathy for anybody. That was outside of their group.
Well, yeah, it's about control, right? And so these people just kind of, they become very dogmatic and iron-fisted in order to maintain the control over this large group of people that were living out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, when I watch the documentary, it's like you see, you know, you talk, like Anand Sheila speaks, you know, there's a woman who got involved in the cult and was, you know, charged with attempted murder. And then there was, you know, there was a guy who was the lawyer for the Bhagwan. Those people were involved in the cult. And then they had other people, like the people that were trying to prosecute them, people that worked for the government. And then also, too, the townsfolk that were against them. And I have to say, it was like, all of the people were very likable. I mean, yes, you know, Anand Sheila was a little, you know, tough, but in the end, you end up kind of liking her to a degree, and you end up liking most of the people, even though they've had problematic pasts.
After Anand Sheila spent her time in jail, she dedicates her life to taking care of the elderly and the sick. And she runs a commune, I believe, in Germany.
Or Switzerland.
Somewhere in Europe, where she's helping these disadvantaged people live comfortable lives surrounded by a community in their last final years. To dismiss her as a sociopath, I think, is unfair. And that's the ultimate thing that I want people to take from Wild Wild Country and this conflict is that when you have a dysfunctional, toxic relationship, it doesn't mean that everybody involved in that relationship and that toxic city are evil or bad.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that bothered me about it, is that some of the individuals dismiss Sheila or the prosecuting attorneys as evil. And that ultimately these individuals all had redeeming qualities to them.
Well, I love what Sheila did, you know, with her, is that she's taken those, the things that she learned from the Bhagwan about living in community and having these people that she's taking care of, you know, the sick, the elderly, the mental people with mental illness, that they are all living together and living in a kind of a commune. And I worked in that kind of environment myself. When I, right out of college, I worked in a group home for people with that were developmentally disabled. And, you know, you have to kind of like, you know, you're all in this together.
And yeah, I would say some of the most satisfying, happiest, and most transformative experiences of my life have been being in community-oriented jobs or living situations. I lived in a cooperative as a undergraduate student for 3 years.
Because that's really where you get a lot of joy in life, is from being part of a community and being with people. You know?
Yeah, for about 3 years, I was going to the Radical Fairy Gatherings in Short Mountain, Tennessee. And for me, it influenced so much of how I make art and how I make media and my identity as a gay man in thinking about one of the most important things we can do is build healthy communities for ourselves. And sometimes, you know, that community can be toxic. You know, I'm the first one out. As controversial as it is to say, I feel right now that some aspects of RuPaul's Drag Race is very toxic. And
doesn't, go to that Reddit, right?
Go to that Reddit, you know, or go some of these bars, too. And
some of the girls are calling, there are a lot of them are calling it out online. They're like, some of you fans are just awful people.
And that is not drag.
No.
That is not drag. And we can have healthy relationships with our audiences and with each other, and not be toxic and make great art and change the world for the better. We don't necessarily, and sometimes it means walking away from that. That means maybe, you know, starting your own reality TV series as, or participating in others. I think Dragula and the rise of Dragula has actually been a very healthy thing because it gives people who might not necessarily fit into this World of Wonder logo VH1 world that they've created, gives them an outlet. And there's it's other, options, there's new, you know, I think Cooking with Drag Queens does that too. And other new shows that are popping up that we can't talk about, but you guys will see on television in the future are going to be doing similar things too. And I think that's really healthy in the long run because a healthy group means people can leave at free will.
And you need diversity for a healthy group. You need different options. It can't be this monolithic thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because otherwise, you know, it can crumble.
And one thing that I notice is that dysfunctional groups have one thing in common is that they abuse women. And they abuse minorities. Mm. And I think about like Scientology. And I think about like right now, Allison Mack from Smallville.
So I don't know if you guys watch Smallville or if you're fans of the TV show. I was a fan very early on just because Tom Welling was so gorgeous. He was so handsome. And then when you see that first episode of Smallville, you know, when that show aired, it was really only a few years after Matthew Shepard died. And you see this beautiful Tom Welling tied up in a cornfield against like, a scarecrow, you know, very much like how they left Matthew Shepard to die. It almost seemed like up against a fence he was. It almost seems as like, you know, they were in referencing that in some way.
Superman was Matthew Shepard.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, it was instantly drawn to that. But then the series, you know, evolved over time. But one of the characters was Chloe, was his best friend, who was an investigative reporter in high school and then on went at the Daily Planet.
She was a proto Lois Lane. Lois Lane character was introduced into the series.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't have a romantic interest in each other. They were always just friends.
And that was a really important thing for the series, showing that, you know, young Clark Kent could have a non-sexual, healthy relationship with a woman on the show, and it didn't turn into sex. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, the writers screwed it up and turned it. She's like, oh, I'm secretly in love with Clark. Ugh.
Who, Chloe was in love with Clark?
Yeah, there was a couple episodes where she revealed that she had feelings for him, but that she could never manifest it because it would ruin their friendship and stuff like that.
She had relationships with other people. But then there was another actress on there, Lana, who played
Kristen
Kirsten Crook. And so Crook, played Lana Lang, who was
Clark Kent's first
girlfriend in high school. Well, one day she decides, and she's in her career in 2006, she decides she's going to go to like this self-help, female empowerment kind of group, NXIVM, to learn what she can do to manifest who she is better and be, you know, overcome shyness. I guess she was very shy and just become a better person. So she goes to this group, she goes for a number of years, and she introduces Allison to it. Well, Allison really gets involved into NXIVM, and it's spelled really weird. It's like NXIVM.
NXIVM.
Yeah.
This sounds like a plot from Smallville, where Allison Mack has been brainwashed by a cult that initially Lana Lang introduced. I'm like, are we talking about Smallville or real life?
It's like a real thing.
Allison Mack might face prison time.
She could be up to like 15 years to 50 years. So she's being charged with like
sex trafficking
and forced labor.
And blackmail.
And because they would, like, this cult, it was led by this guy, Keith Raniere, and he was just arrested in Mexico. And he was like a former Amway salesman, and he just kind of came up with this plan for self-improvement, because, you know, people that are looking for these self-improvement kind of things, in some ways they're very vulnerable because they're looking for answers. And, you know, if somebody appears and says, I've got the answers, they're all over it. And so she would recruit women for him, and they would get them involved in this cult. They would deprive them of sleep. so that they were kind of more open to a bunch of suggestions. They would shave off their pubic hair. I guess they would brand his initials in their pubic region somewhere.
On their tits?
On their tits?
Yeah.
I thought it was by their vagina.
Oh, I was reading that they branded their initials right there on their breasts.
Oh, my God. And so they had, like, restrictive diets. And there was another person, I guess, had known Allison. Allison maybe tried to recruit her into the cult, and she wasn't really up for it. But then she saw Allison, like, you know, a year or two later, and she's just like, she looked really emaciated, she looked really tired, she looked really sick. So part of me is just like, I feel bad that she got involved in this, and you know, but it's like, how do you send somebody to prison for like getting involved in a cult like that? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, John Waters is a filmmaker who's very fascinated by the Manson family. Mm-hmm. And befriended one of the cult members.
Leslie Van Houten?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's very complicated because some of, you know, these people who are involved in these cults are victims mm-hmm. themselves. Mm. And even if there are perpetrators. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I really love about John Waters and Mink Stole is their compassion for people who are sort of like on the fringes of society. And one culturally, mentally, mm-hmm. Their temperament. And I think like, that's what John Waters' films do such a great job is sort of making us laugh and celebrate the painful nature of being a misfit.
Mm.
And, you know, those films still resonate with us today. And so, you know, Peaches Christ, who is a real intelligent, mindful person, when it comes to, you know, misfit culture, the underdog and these cult films, beautifully interviewed Mink Stole about her life and her career and the impact of these films, especially Female Trouble and Pink Flamingos. Mm. And it was really something marvelous to be able to, for us to orchestrate with our Hamburger Marys this event where people in our city of Chicago could come and celebrate these films and this actor's life.
Mm-hmm. And it, you know, the crowd was really receptive to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mink and Peaches were very pleased. They said it was a really fantastic crowd.
I think they said it was the best crowd they had seen.
They did say it was the best crowd for the show.
But don't they say that everywhere they go?
You know, maybe. But they definitely did say it to us. But they said, you know, people were like shouting lines from the movies. I mean, people really love those
deeply
movies.
Deeply love
those movies. They're so connected to those movies. They're so connected to Mink. And it's like, you know, Peaches really brings that out and put together really a fantastic show. So if you guys are ever thinking about like, what kind of programming should we get Idol Worship. You'll love it.
You'll worship Idol Worship. You sound like Gene Shalit.
You will. Or if you get a chance to see it somewhere, I think they're probably going to do it in Provincetown this summer, I'm guessing.
It's such a nice time to see how Mink Stole affects Peaches mm-hmm. Christ. And there's a sweetness mm-hmm. to their relationship. Like, you know, definitely not a mother and son, but like an aunt and nephew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Peaches Christ and Mink Stole are family, mm-hmm. yeah. not just friends. Mm-hmm. And there's a, you know, you think for all the outrageousness that these two individuals have in their artistic careers, that they would be as outrageous in person,
mm-hmm.
but actually like our conversations with Peaches and Mink Stole were really mostly about like our families, our pets, mm-hmm. our love for mm-hmm. food and films right. and stuff like that. And it's so easy to forget that Mink Stole and Peaches mm-hmm. Christ are behind some really memorable moments mm-hmm. in LGBT mm-hmm. culture.
Well, I think one of my favorite
and really just yeah. Off the rails moments,
oh,
you know?
For sure.
I mean, Female Trouble, I wouldn't suck your dick if I was suffocating and there was oxygen in your balls.
There are two kinds of people. My kind of people and assholes.
And assholes.
Is that how it goes? I think I got it right.
And you know, you would think that in mm-hmm. real person, Mink Stole would be this equally, you know, rough and tumble kind of mm-hmm. person, but she's the sweetest mm-hmm. person you could ever have the pleasure of meeting.
Although it's like we had talked about like going out to eat a different couple of times and what yeah. should be eaten, what kinds of things, and she's not, I guess, I don't think she eats beef, right?
Yes.
And so we go to a restaurant, to a diner, and like I order a cheeseburger. And I could see out of the corner of my eye her looking at me like, like she gave me she gave me a serial mom kind of look.
Yeah,
but it was just out of the corner of my eye, and I was just like, I'm not gonna look. I'm not gonna look.
Well, John Waters wrote a lot of these characters with his friends in mind, and certainly, you know, that the memorable scene between Kathleen Turner and Mink Stoll and Cyril Mom really reflects some of the conversations he's had with Mink Stoll. You know, because I almost felt like saying, like, I don't recycle. Mm-hmm. You know, to see her kind of reaction. Because, you know, and then there was one time we were sitting at dinner and she starts talking about something. And I just had this, like, I just was transported to that scene where, like, Pussy Willows. Was, you know, I want to be like, what exactly?
But you don't want to shout out, you know, when you're having dinner, you don't want to shout out the lines to these shows with them.
Well, because I don't know them either, you know. No. But part of me is like, I'm just as befuddled about it as I'm sure they are as well. And I think, you know, we're more busy making art than we are sort of like bathing in the warm but ultimately very decadent waters of reveling in your fans. And I think, and this is what a message I want to leave with you guys from this podcast, is that it's all about loving the work, loving the art. And if we can learn anything from this Osho, this crazy guru who is brutal. I mean, this is some of the quotes that he had. He was...
They were kind of iron-fisted, right? But
yeah, messed up. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is one thing he said. The fundamental rule of this violent life is all means at good if they fulfill the ends. And of course, rather than arguing, it is better to pull the sword. The sword decides things immediately. It is easier to fight with a person than decide who is right. Might is right. The rule still remains. The rule of the jungle triumphs over all.
It's, you know what, I mean,
that could be like, you know,
it's in many ways
Stalin.
Yeah, but also it could be Stalin. In many ways, it is a truism, though. In some ways,
I don't agree with that.
But it's not something. That's not the truism we want, and it's not the thing we should work towards.
Absolutely not. You know, it's like, yeah, let's pull out swords and stab each other to death.
But that's the thing, is though, too, when you think about that, it's like how, like, when you talk about male privilege, and oftentimes is that's what that kind of thing is because you're a guy and you can do it just because you're a guy, because you have that power.
Remember, a lot of people uprooted themselves to follow this Bhagwan.
Yeah.
And art and chaos and sex and pleasure is something that we need to incorporate into our everyday lives. You know, this is his Ten Commandments that he wrote. You want me to read them to you? Which is crazy list. Never obey anyone's command.
Okay.
What's the first
one? I'm right there with you.
Unless it's coming from within you as well.
Okay.
There's no other God than life itself. Which, you know, this reminds me of you had a guy who was a manager of a gym that he was like, he had joined a cult, I think. And he had come into a meeting and he was like, you know, I just decided we're all gods on this earth. We are all God. You are the God of your own world, and you have created your own reality.
Oh, I remember when he said that to me, and I said to myself, because I actually worked for him, and I was just like, when he told me that he was God, I was like, I need to get out of here, because he might decide it's time for me to have a heart attack.
It's time to judgment day.
You know?
His other Ten Commandments are, truth is within you. Do not search for it elsewhere. Which is really easy to get delusional, right? Mm-hmm. Love is prayer. To become nothingness is the door to truth. Nothing, you know, and it starts, when you start hearing these commandments, it's like, it's contradictory. And the idea is to, I think that I can take from him.
And befuddle?
No, it's that it's important to shake things up and be skeptical and be playful and ask questions and seek out new answers and explore the world, explore your mind and explore your body. I don't think that's nothing wrong with that. Try to work to have healthier relationships with your community, with your group. He says, do not swim, float. Live wakefully. Die each moment so that you can reach the new moments. Do not search. That with is stop and see.
You've got converts listening to it already. They're all like, I'm signing up.
Signing the check.
I'm going to OSHA.
So join our cult. Feast of Fun is a cult too.
It is not a cult.
And needs your money. And if you don't send your money right now, your life will be destroyed.
Listen, I want people to have free will. I want them to be happy. And I want some of the things that the Bhagwan wanted for the people. You know, I want people to have fun. I want people to enjoy their life. And I think that was it seemed to me like that was his main message with that stuff.
And I would say every trickster figure in religion mm-hmm. ultimately has that message. Whether it's Loki or Satan or Coyote.
Or Mitzel Plick
from Superman. He was not necessarily a villain. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that we have to keep in mind mm-hmm. in the new Infinity War. Mm-hmm. We'll see a very different side of Loki.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, he's not a villain. He's just a difficult figure that needs to be misunderstood. Just like Mr. Mitzel Plick.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite drag queen from the Superman universe, and I think at that heart and the soul of that is that like those forces are part of everything in this world, and we need to be very wise and very careful, and ultimately approach it with a lot of humility and a lot of kindness and compassion every time we're dealing with some difficult situation and difficult person. And it's okay to walk away from toxic environments. Sometimes relationships can't be saved.
Mm.
And that's okay. You know, that's,
you know, if you want to get out of it, I looked at the WikiHow on how to get out of a cult. And they're just kind of like, pack a bag, but do it in secret. You know, have an escape plan. Don't tell anybody. Just run. Go to the police if you can. They're there to help you.
Find a safe space.
You know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, remember, you're probably going to be cut off from these people or they might try and kidnap you again.
And that's what happens, you know, Kate Bornstein said on this podcast with her relationship with Scientology. Mm-hmm.
That's a great podcast if you go back and listen to that one.
She was cut off by her entire family. She has not seen her children to this day after she left the church.
Mm-hmm. She has one child, I think, right?
Her daughter.
An adult daughter, and she's deep in Scientology, raised in Scientology. You know, it's one thing coming to Scientology, but then being raised in it, too. Gosh, could you just imagine?
And, you know, I felt like I wanted Wild Wild Country to be very similar to Leah Remini's mm-hmm. Documentary series about Scientology to sort of like show the dysfunctional nature. But there's, you know, I would say that the orange people are different in a profound way, is that there are some really healthy ideas mm-hmm. in their spiritual beliefs that shouldn't be discarded because of their toxic, mm-hmm. Poisonous, literally, relationship with the world. And, you know, sometimes, and I would say that for every religion and every church group, there's always something redeeming in every person and every faith and every form of art.
Mm.
But, you know, it's okay to take the things that are wrong and toxic and throw those out.
That's for sure. That's for sure. I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen.
We couldn't do this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming without your help. And we cherish all of you guys. We consider you guys not just cult member.
It's not a cult.
The friends, families, mm-hmm. audience. We are part of your community, and you are part of us. And mm-hmm. we appreciate your participation. You can interact with us mm-hmm. on social media mm-hmm. at Feast of Fun on Twitter, Instagram, on Facebook. We even have a Facebook group for the friends of the mm-hmm. show. If you're interested in sort of, if you're a casual listener, you mm-hmm. don't listen to every show that we do, you just sort of keep tabs on it by following our group, and then make sure that the alarms that you get notify you when the latest posts are being
posted.
Get
your notifications ready. And I want to hear what you guys have to think about Wild Wild Country. I know lots of you have probably seen it or will see it. I want to know your thoughts on it. What did you think of it? What side did you have? Because there's, I think, one article, I think is it by Esquire or Vulture, says that whose side you are on in this thing, like, tells you what kind of person you are. And I'm kind of like, I still don't know what side I'm on.
I'm on the side of kindness, mm-hmm. compassion,
yeah.
and creativity. Oh.
And
both in all these individuals yeah. involved in this
yeah.
had that to some degree.
Yeah. And I don't want to, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but the ending is really, it really is a weird twist at the end. You're kind of just like, wow, I watched 6 hours and now this, you're like, this is everything.
The
last moments of the documentary are really fantastic. So
thank you guys so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.